Atta. Now. Atta.
Atta.
Hereafter.
Hereafter.
Give
day.
I shall describe.
Lonesome.
Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Punyakirti.
Punyakirti.
Celebrated for virtuous activities.
Celebrated for virtuous activities.
Guru Dvaha.
Guru Dvaha.
O best of the Gurus.
O best of the Gurus.
Swayambhu Vasya.
Swayambhu Vasya.
Of Swayambhu Vasya.
Of Swayambhu
Vasya. Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Mano.
Mano.
Of Mano.
Of Mano.
Hare.
Hare.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Of the personality of Godhead.
Amsa.
Amsa.
Plenary expansion.
Plenary expansion.
Amsa.
Amsa.
Artha.
Artha.
Janmana.
Janmana.
Born of.
Born.
Translation, Maitreya continued, O best of the Kuru Dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, who was born of a part of a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For a part of Lord Brahma is a powerful expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Brahma is Jivatapi, is empowered by the Lord, and therefore is considered a plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes it happens that when there is no suitable living entity to be empowered to act as Brahma, the Supreme Lord Himself appears as Brahma. Brahma is the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Swayambhu Manu was the direct son of Brahma. The great sage Maitreya is now going to explain about the descendants of this Manu, all of whom are widely celebrated for their pious activities. Before speaking of these pious descendants, Maitreya has already described the descendants of impious activities, representing anger, envy, unpalatable speech, oral, fear, and death. Purposely, therefore, he is next relating the history of the life of Dhruva Maharaj, the most pious king within this universe. Text 7, Swayambhu Manu had two sons by his wife Satarupa, and the names of the sons were Uttanapada and Priyavrata, because both of them were descendants of a plenary expansion of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of God. They were very competent to rule the universe, to maintain and protect citizens. Prabhupada, it is said that these two kings, Uttanapada and Priyavrata, were especially empowered by the Supreme Personality of God, unlike the king, great King Vrishabha, who was the Supreme Personality of God himself. King Uttanapada had two queens named Sumiti and Suruchi. Suruchi was much more dear to the king. Sumiti, who had a son named Dhruva, was not his favorite. Purport, the great sage Maitreya wanted to describe the pious activities of the kings. Priyavrata was the first son of Swayambhu Manu, and Uttanapada was the second. But the great sage Maitreya immediately began to speak of Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Uttanapada, because Maitreya was very eager to describe pious activities. The incidents in the life of Dhruva Maharaj are very attractive for devotees. From his pious actions, one can learn how one can detach himself from material possessions and how one can enhance one's devotional service by severe austerities and penances. By hearing the activities of pious Dhruva, one can enhance one's faith in God and can directly connect with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus one can very soon be elevated to the transcendental platform of devotional service. The example of Dhruva Maharaj's austerities can immediately generate a feeling of devotional service in the hearts of the hearers. Once upon a time, King Uttanapada was patting the son of Suruchi Uttama, placing him on his lap. Dhruva Maharaj was also trying to get on the king's lap, and the king did not very much welcome him. While the child Dhruva Maharaj was trying to get on the lap of his father, Suruchi's stepmother became very envious of the child, and with great pride she began to speak so as to be heard by the king himself. Therefore, the king, of course, was equally affectionate towards both his sons, Uttama and Dhruva, so he had natural inclination to take Dhruva as well as Uttama on his lap. But because of his favoritism towards his queen, Suruchi, he could not welcome Dhruva Maharaj despite his feelings. King Uttanapada's feeling was understood by Suruchi, and therefore with great pride she began to speak about the king's affection for her. This is the nature of a woman. If a woman understands that her husband regards her as a favorite, is especially affectionate to her, she takes undue advantage. These symptoms are visible even in such an elevated society as a family of Swayambhu Manu. Therefore, it's concluded the feminine nature of woman is present everywhere. Queen Sirushi told Dhruva Maharaj, "My dear child, you do not deserve to sit on the throne or on the lap of the king. Surely, you are also the son of the king, but because you do not take your birth from my womb, you are not qualified to sit on your father's lap." For her part, Queen Sirushi was very proudly informed Dhruva Maharaj that to be this king's son was not the qualification of sitting on the lap or the throne of the king. Rather, this privilege was dependent on one's having taken birth from her womb. In other words, she indirectly informed Dhruva Maharaj that although he happened to be born of the king, he was considered an illegitimate son because of his birth in the womb of the other king, queen. "My dear child, you are unaware that you were born not of my womb, but of another woman. Therefore, you should know that your attempt is doomed to failure. You are trying to fulfill a desire which is impossible to fulfill." Report: the small child, Dhruva Maharaj, was naturally affectionate towards his father and did not know that there was a distinction between his two mothers. This distinction was pointed out by King Sirushi, who informed him that since he was a child, he did not understand the distinctions between the two queens. This is another statement of the queen, Sirushi's pride. "If you at all desire to rise to the throne of the king, then you have to undergo severe austerities. First of all, you must satisfy the Supreme Personality of God in Narayana, and then, when you are favored by him because of such worship, you shall have to take your next birth from my womb." For her part, Sirushi was so envious of Dhruva Maharaj that she indirectly asked him to change his body. According to her, first of all, he had to die, then take his next body in her womb, and only then would it be possible for Dhruva Maharaj to ascend to the throne of his father. The sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, as a snake when struck by a stick breathes very heavily, Dhruva Maharaj, having been struck by the strong words of his stepmother, began to breathe very heavily because of great anger. When he saw that his father was silent and did not protest, even he left the palace and went to his mother." When Dhruva Maharaj reached his mother, his lips were trembling in anger and he was crying very grievously. Queen Suniti immediately lifted her son onto her lap. To all the palace residents who had heard all the harsh words of Sirushi, related everything in detail. Thus Suniti also became greatly aggrieved. This incident was unbearable to Suniti's patience. She began to burn as if in a forest fire, and in her grief she became just like a burnt leaf, and so lamented. As she remembered the words of her co-wife, her bright lotus-like face filled with tears, and thus she spoke. For a part, when a man is aggrieved, he feels exactly like a burnt leaf in a forest fire. Suniti's position was like that. Although her face was as beautiful as a lotus flower, it dried up because of the burning fire caused by the harsh words of her co-wife. She also was breathing very heavily, and she did not know the factual remedy for the painful situation. Not finding any remedy, she said to her son, "My dear son, don't wish for anything inauspicious for others. Anyone who inflicts pain upon others suffers himself from that pain." So Niti said, "My dear boy, whatever has been spoken by Sirushi is so, because the king, your father, does not consider me his wife or even his maidservant. He feels ashamed to accept me. Therefore, it is a fact that you have taken birth from the womb of an unfortunate woman, and by being fed from her breast, you have grown up." Translation by Maitreya continued, "O best of the Kuru dynasty, I shall now describe before you the descendants of Swayambhu Manu, who was born of a part of the plenary expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So the descendants of Swayambhu Manu are described in this canto, canto 4. And you'll see that the two sons were Uttanapada and Priyavrata. So Maitreya begins to talk about the sons of Uttanapada, one of them is Uttama, the other one Dhruva. So particularly the story of Dhruva is about to be told, because that story directly relates to bhakti and to the Supreme Lord. Here he says that Amsa Jamana, born from an Amsa, but Amsa of the Supreme Lord. So technically, of course, Brahma is not the Supreme Lord, but rather an empowered living energy, an empowered jiva. Sometimes the word Amsa and Kala are used for expansions of the Lord Himself, as we see Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Amsa, Karanakshaya Vishnu, or Kirdakshaya Vishnu and Amsa, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And similarly, Kala is an expansion from an Amsa. But we can extend that a little and think of Brahma himself as an empowered jiva, guna avatar, and therefore also call him Amsa of the Lord. And those whom he produces often have great power also. So he produces Swayambhuva Manu, who has great power. So he is an Amsa of Brahma, so to speak. So in this way we get the word used a little liberally in this case. Of course, sometimes Brahma is the Supreme Lord, in which he is directly the Lord, and therefore the word also would be properly used in that case. So anyway, the Manus and the Devatas are considered to be the Vibhutis of the Lord. They show some special power, not as much power as Brahma, not as much power as the Shaktivesh avatar, but they show significant power, so therefore they also have a special position. So Swayambhuva Manu produced these sons. He, of course, reigned for 71 yugas cycles, the first part of the day of Brahma, and his sons were Dhruva and Uttama. And later we'll see how Dhruva ruled the kingdom for thousands and thousands of years. So this is a description of the genealogy from the beginning of the day of Brahma, where the kings expand their dynasty and rule the earth. And Manus from Swayambhuva Manu all the way up to the day of Brahma until the 14th Manu are sequentially described in the Bhagavatam, particularly in Canto 8. A whole list of the remaining seven Manus are also described. So this is one of the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Manvantara, to describe the Manus and their duties within the day of Brahma. So taking this as an opportunity, the Bhagavatam describes the devotional aspect of these Manus. So here we have, within Swayambhuva Manvantara period, the appearance of Dhruva. Dhruva is very famous because due to his great devotion, meditation on the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord appeared before him. So this form of the Lord is something called Krishnigarbha, one who appeared from Krishna. This is one of the avatar forms which is counted in the first canto. There's a list of avatars there, and this Krishnigarbha is listed among the avatars at that time. So, therefore Dhruva is famous because the Lord took a particular form and appeared before him. But this is very special. If the devotee sees the Lord, the Lord makes his appearance in this material world for a particular devotee, then that devotee must be considered very special. So Dhruva was the son of Swayambhuva Manu, and the Lord showed great mercy to him and appeared before him. So therefore he's a remarkable devotee of the Lord. So that will be described later in this story, the devotional service of Dhruva. So the kings, as I said, they established Dharma, but more than Dharma, they practiced Bhakti. And that we'll see in the case of Dhruva, His history shows he was a great devotee because the Lord appeared before him. Nevertheless, he also acted as a king for many thousands of years, and he ruled according to the laws of Dharma. So he followed the regular rules, but at the same time was a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. And later it's described how he gave up this when he was about to leave the planet. Then the Vishnu Dutas came and got him. He had a very, very auspicious departure from the material world by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So he was a very special devotee. So the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu is particularly described in detail with this story of Dhruva. So the incident itself arises because of competition between the two queens of Uttanapada. Jealousy, and because of rejection by the king, Dhruva went to the forest. Ultimately, he went to his mother and complained. His mother said, "You have to worship Narayan. Where is Narayan? Narayan is somewhere in the forest." So then he went into the forest and he began to worship Narayan. So the special quality of Dhruva was his great determination. But his determination was based upon the fact that he wanted the kingdom. So it is an example of mixed bhakti, devotional service with the goal of attaining a material result. Karma Mr. Bhakti. In spite of this, Dhruva is glorified because we see that later he regretted his material desire. When he saw the Lord, then he understood that the Lord is much greater than any material desire. Material desires are all insignificant in front of the Lord. So he gave up his desire. Nevertheless, his attempts in the beginning were tinged with material desire. So he's called a mixed devotee, a karma mistra bhakta, because of that. He nevertheless had great determination, and the determining factor in this story is that he got the mercy of Narada Muni. So because of Narada Muni's mercy and his instructions, he eventually got the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So he had great determination, but he also had to get the mercy of the great devotee of the Lord. And then he was successful in his endeavor. So he didn't do it on his own, but rather he got the mercy of Narada Muni. Great devotees, of course, are very merciful, so they like to help those who are endeavoring in devotional service. So Narada Muni made his appearance and gave instructions on how to worship the Supreme Lord. And then Dhruva very faithfully followed the orders of Narada Muni. And then the Lord became impressed with Dhruva's great determination, and he made his appearance before him. So the story shows that one approaches the Lord through the mercy of the devotee of the Lord. And this is how bhakti works. So the devotee is always necessary for the success of devotional service. So though we understand that Dhruva had great determination, we should never forget that his ultimate success depended upon the mercy of the devotee. So that is the significance of this story.
Hamsa
means Kala. Akala usually is less, shows less powers than the Hamsa.
We consider that Swayambhu Muni is our father. Muni. We consider we are the son of Muni, like we consider.
Manu, well, we are the descendants in one sense. All the human races are descendants from Manu. He was the first progenitor, so to speak, and then everyone, the other Prajapatis were born from him, etc. So, yeah. Not all of them, but many of them. Brahma also gave rise to others, so we cannot say that Manu is the only person. You see, there are other sages born from Brahma. like Atri and Pulasti, etc.
Yes.
They were Prajapatis also, sages, so they produce offspring also. So he wasn't the only person, but he was famous.
The second is other Muni also, they had Odisha, Monsi, India.
Yeah.
Like this, they also treat and living entity.
Yeah.
But why do you consider Muni as our father?
Well, as I said, if one comes in different gotra, maybe he isn't. So, but Manu is famous, of course, but he's not. He was the first king, and he resides for 71 yuga cycles, so he's famous for that reason. He's not the only person. There are other Prajapatis also.
Who are the citizens?
Huh?
Who are the devotees go to Uttaraloka?
It's not mentioned how one goes there. I suppose if one worships Dhruva, one may go there, or worships Prishnigarbha, the form that he saw, one may go there. It doesn't really say.
Because sometimes it is mentioned, at least in the material world, but it is just mentioned.
Yeah, it is. There's a verse like that, that he went to this planet, Dhruva Loka, and which is a spiritual planet because the Lord is there. Of course, the Lord is in many places in the material world. There's a Matsya planet, and there's a Kurma planet. There's different planets within the material world where these different forms of the avatars also stay. So there are planets in the material world where the avatars stay, which you can say are spiritual because they reside in different forms of the Lord.
Is it also under description? The dualism? Is it also under material world? Dualism?
It's in the material world. Polestar.
Polestar.
Star up there, you see. Star. North Star, whatever it is.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th chapter, he needs to explain like that dualism was under description. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th chapter, explain that Hrimanshibu and Hrimanshibu faced Brahmadev, and he explained that even Dhruvaloka also under description.
There is a little bit of a controversy there about whether the planet is actually eternal or not, because one place it says that Dhruva then went to the Vaikuntha after that, so then if he does, then that planet would not be there anymore. So of course, we can say that any spiritual planet becomes aprakat at a certain point, just as Vrindavan becomes aprakat when it's not destroyed. The material world may be destroyed, but the pastimes of the Lord are never destroyed in spite of that.
What are the instructions given by Narada to Dhruva? Are these instructions explained in the universe on a separate thing?
No, this was here.
Narendra says Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai.
This is Swami Maharaj ki
jai.
Jivan Gandhi Pati Ram Pati Ram Pati Ram Pati
Ram
Pati Ram Pati Ram Pati Ram Pati.
Thank you.
వాలే తింటే వాలే వేసేస్తాను.